Welcome, everyone, back from Mom and Cat and back to Brainstorm Brewery. I hope you guys had a good time at the pre-release last weekend. I know it was pretty crazy busy at my store. I wasn't able to play, unfortunately, so getting my Magic Online fixed this week.
Why couldn't you play?
Well, I went to a concert on Friday night, a country music concert. I know how excited you would be about that. So I didn't go to the midnight one. And then Saturday we had 75 people Friday night, and we had another 57 on Saturday, and we were running out of spots, and we had capped it, and then we went over our cap, and then a kid came in and wanted to play, so I just gave him my spot.
I was going to make fun of you for saying that you had to vend the pre-release instead of playing, and then I was going to brag about how I vended the pre-release and played.
But you kind of just...
Wow.
I mean, that's what I usually do is work and play, but it's different. I think we have slightly different setups, because it sounds like when you're like vending, you're like doing all your own thing, and for me it's just all integrated with the store. So like
ours is mostly integrated with the store. Like I still bring my own singles out through the register,
right? But like, so do other people sell them cards if you're not there?
No.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing for us is just we're all on the same page. So it's like if I'm there and I check out other people doing other stuff behind me. You know, I essentially function as a store employee when I'm there, and then
I do the same thing.
I'll check people out
for drinks and snacks and all that stuff.
Yeah, so it's just all together, so I don't have to worry about it. So I can actually, I don't have to be behind the counter if I'm trying to play. I can just sometimes play. But in this particular case, I was just judging it, and gave the kid my spot. But it seemed like people had a lot of fun. I mean, we sold out. We had, that's 125 people over two events, and then we sold out, ran out of product on Sunday at the Two-Headed Giant event. So it seems like people showed up.
I am not a store employee, and I'm fundamentally unhelpful to people when I'm standing behind the counter and they ask me questions.
Intentionally, too.
So
you can just refuse to answer questions.
So the store where I have the case, the guy is basically the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Okay.
Like, basically, exactly. So that's how he deals with customers. I'm like, fuck, this guy's my hero.
Somebody's like, Jason, how much is a water? Nope.
Nope.
That is very rare water. It does not have your fingerprints on it.
Well, I never got like full training on how to do everything at the store. So sometimes if someone comes up with and they want to go do a particular thing with a comic book or something, I just have to be like, and I'm the magic guy. Time for someone who can help you come over here.
I'll use that excuse too. Like anything with D&D or anything with like tabletop stuff, I'm just like, Ryan, get over here.
Yep. Anyways, I know you guys don't care that much about us, so we'll stop talking about us and move on. We've got a lot to knock out this week. We're going to hit some emails up. Then, obviously, there you might have heard there were some bannings, some unbannings, and some neither of those, right? There was nothing in Standard. We'll get into that. We'll talk about what it means for Commander with Protean Hulk, and then we'll talk a little more about Amonkhet and the price changes we've seen before we head out for the evening. So let's go ahead and start with some emails. DJ, you want
to... I got some bad personal news, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, let's do it. This is Jason. Let's hear it.
Here's a bad beat story. Okay. My whole life... I mean, not my whole... Starting in, like, I want to say 8th grade. We're talking, like, 1998. I was convinced that in the Bare Naked Ladies song, One Week...
Oh, this guy... I don't care even a little.
Hey, hear me out. Apparently he says chickity China, the Chinese chicken.
You're so
I
bad.
Heard it as chicken de China, as in French for chicken of France. Or French for chicken of China.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. So my friend actually tweeted at the official Bare Naked Ladies Twitter account, because this had formed enough of a hubbub that we had to go to the internet to settle it. And the official Bare Naked Ladies Twitter account tweeted back at him, "Chickity China!" exclamation point, just to rub it in. Not like period, like, "Oh, this is a fact." He's like, tell your friend, fuck you. So it's "Chickity China!" exclamation point, Jason, get fucked. I lost the bet. There was no money involved. I would have bought my friend Jim some chickity China, Chinese chicken, because apparently that's a thing, even though that makes no sense to me. chicken did China? that makes sense because they're Canadian. And wow. Whatever.
You know, I'm not going to say you deserved it, but man. Did you know you could just literally Google 1 week lyrics and find out?
No, because like Total Lunatics. Okay, look, if it's a scan from the Stunt album cover. Boom,
I saw somebody link you that too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was like, whatever. I've already lost. But then the rub-ins came because like he may have shown a picture of the album cover, but it didn't have an exclamation point. So my day got worse. So I lost that. So yeah, but like all those lyric sites, what kind of person like types out lyrics? They're not like scans from the artist. It's just like some dude's like listening to some Rhiannon song a bunch. Like, I think these are the lyrics. They're full of mistakes, man. I wanted something official, and it doesn't get any more official than the official Bare Naked Ladies Twitter account. So you know what? I'm done making bets for a while. This feels real bad to me. I was really glad. Sure I was right.
Jason teased us before the cast and wanted to tell us what it was, probably because he only wanted to get made fun of once. But I'm actually really glad you shared that.
Yeah,
I'm sincerely glad you had a worse day because of this.
Dude, I mean, personally, yeah, I think it's funny when you're mad, so.
You know what, Corbin? I'm trying real hard not to smile right now, but I hope you feel bad.
Okay, close enough. I'll give you credit for doing it off the top of your head.
No, I know the lyrics. I just was trying
sure,
to
literally just proven that you do not.
That's my karaoke. Oh, that's my karaoke jam, dude. That's my go-to. And you know what? I can do it without the lyrics displayed on the screen. That's probably why I was overconfident about my interpretation of the lyrics.
So real talk, it's actually incredibly impressive if anyone can get up there and do that entire song. Because it's ridiculous, right? So.
Well, I need tequila first, but yeah,
well, yeah
that's
I mean,
my karaoke
yeah.
song. So, bad beats, whatever. So, I'm the kind of guy that derails a podcast.
Interesting. We should do some karaoke in Vegas, I think.
Yeah, okay, I'd be down for that.
Right? I'm the same way. Unless I drink, I won't karaoke at all. But there are times. You know, it's the thing that happens at the Pro Tour sometimes, and I've gotten better at enjoying myself at it. You know, especially where it's a situation where everyone's in a room doing it rather than one person, you know, gets up on stage in front of everybody and embarrasses themselves like I would do. So
you would sing something like serious.
Actually, what I did last time we went was everyone was like doing, you know, whatever your normal stuff, your little Jimmy World, that sort of thing, right? You know, and then I queued up my song for later. And it was Amarillo by Morning by George Strait. And I like drank for like an hour just to make sure I was going to be able to have drank enough to sing that song. Not because I'm not like comfortable doing that, but I like really like that song and I wanted to, you know, be cool. So I did it.
Wow. Your thing's more embarrassing than my thing. Who knew?
Yeah, it's fine. George Strait's great. George Strait karaoke's great.
George Strait karaoke is probably better than George Strait.
I mean, that feels mildly insulting to the man. Right? That doesn't sound nice. Anyways, DJ, let's read some emails.
All right. This is from Matt DiMaggio. DJ, I assume you're the only one who reads these emails. Thanks for keeping the show running for these clowns. Here's an appropriately snarky Patreon email for a future episode of your choosing. This was
no, we're done with this one.
Pretty good. I'm liking it already.
I ain't no clown, DiMaggio.
Wow.
Hey, Brew Crew and DJ. I really like how clearly defined each of your roles are in the new three-person podcast format. Jason is the funny one. Corbin is the one who is passably good at magic. And then there's a guest host who takes care of the shit work, like reading emails and actually recording the podcast.
Corbin's not good at magic.
Everyone records their own audio.
Yeah, I'm not entirely responsible for recording the podcast. I'm partial. I'm 33% responsible.
Yes, he records his own audio, just like we all do.
Yep, so Corbin's not got nobody to blame for Chewgate last week.
Well, real talk is I watched, if we're going to talk about that, I feel very bad. I watched the Audacity levels and it wasn't picking up, and then I thought that it wouldn't have picked up.
So what you're saying is you're terrible at Audacity.
What I'm saying is it was a really unfortunate mistake, and I feel bad about it.
Sorry, all right, so Sam. Here's the question. Well, I have almost 400 loose booster packs dating back to RTR block. Most are prize packs, and the rest came out of fat packs and holiday boxes. I don't have the time or temperament to sell them three at a time on eBay. Is there a really easy way to get something close to fair value for these? I now realize that the advice to, quote, save them and draft them with your friends is pretty much a lie. Who has seven friends with nothing better to do than to draft for no stakes once a week? Thanks as always, Matt.
Okay. I know Corbin doesn't have seven friends.
First of all, you have to make the stakes, right? Which means you charge people enough to cover prize support for the trash draft, or you know whatever chaos draft. But it sounds to me like if you're not doing anything with them, they have no value to you and therefore are worth zero. So you should probably just bring them to GP Vegas and just have like a 200 person draft or whatever. Or I guess you have four of them, right? So yeah, you can have like 130 people draft.
Is your advice to give them away for free?
Well, it sounds like they have no value to him.
No, he's trying to get money for them, Doug. That's why he's emailing us. He would hit up the Commando. He's like, hey, how do I give these away to people? And the Commando would be like, we give shit away all the time. Let us do it.
Corbin's no, like, light them on fire because they're basically not valuable to you, so.
Just give them to Corbin.
Be really popular at GP Vegas, that's all.
Dude. That's true, just like the big old stack of boosters just breaking them off to like people to open doors and shit. The guy brings your bags up to the room, like, here you go. Here's a couple packs of Scars of Meriden. The guy's like, what?
Real talk is like, I actually have the same problem because I have so many extra packs sitting around my house. Just like Grando Almond Cat stuff, BFZ packs, just all this stuff sitting around that.
Here's an issue. People do not trust them. Even after the packs were like mapped or mappable, you know, people still, they're like, man, a loose pack is a Mac pack. And that's what.
Yeah, the open market value on individual packs is rough unless they're really old stuff.
Yep.
What you want to do, though, is there are a couple different options. I mean, obviously finding seven friends and doing it is a thing, but also maybe partner with your LGS. Like, hey, I want to put on an event up here. You know, can we work something out, right, where both groups there are getting something? You know,
you have a lifetime supply of Pack Wars right now.
Yeah, and wacky drafts are fun, and Pack Wars is fun. Pack Wars is how I open
boxes.
The
problem is just you can't really monetize Pack Wars.
You can have fun with it.
Yeah, but you can monetize just like chaos drafts at the store, you know, so.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thing, and that's the way I would suggest going about it. So, you know, your friends is, you know, that is what it is, and maybe that's enough, and maybe it's not to actually get stuff together, but, you know, I would suggest looking to the store and seeing if there's any way you can get in on, you know, just run it on a Saturday up there, and then you can sort of open it up to everyone there. And sometimes the store is just happy to let you be in there, or maybe they, you know, you have to charge some sort of like small venue fee so they get something or whatever. You know, that depends on your store, but it expands your pool of available players, especially if the store, you know, helps you advertise it, sort of thing.
I'm going to be honest, that sounds like a lot more work than what he didn't want to do, which is just like list them on eBay.
I actually don't think so, because you get a play. I mean, it's not that hard. Store, for the first Monday of each month for the next year, can you post on your Facebook page and take signups that we're doing this, and then I'll be there. Like, I mean, I'm not saying it is or isn't great or whatever, but it's an option. It sounds like perhaps a better option than where we're at, which is list them all up on eBay a little at a time. That's just my thoughts. I mean, these are ways you can get rid of packs.
Yeah, but there's no like, oh, guys on the podcast know about this secret way. Nah, sorry, man. There's no secret handshake for getting rid of a bunch of loose packs. They're financially made out of AIDS. So,
yep.
If you can find a way to use packs. For people who don't care about the value of the cards in them and they want the experience, and then hopefully they'll get prized out in non-searched packs, that's ideal for them. So there are options, but none of them are great, and you might end up just, I don't know, selling them on eBay like you didn't want to.
Well, you could also try to
do
list
that thing
them.
That you asked us to avoid.
Well, depending on what
doing.
Depending on what sets it's from, you could list it in more in larger quantities rather than as draft sets. Although, you know,
do you again, have large quantities?
I said 400 packs.
400 packs, right?
So just like 400 rando packs.
Well, yeah, like maybe if he's got 36 Zendikar things, you can just say it's a box. Right.
No, don't do that. Oh, man, I always get bad feedback. If I'm like, hey, it's a box worth of boosters, but they're loose, so good luck.
Well, yeah, I mean, you definitely, it's like I said, it's not ideal there, right? But anyways, that's what we got. Hopefully that helps a little.
Aren't you glad you're a patron?
Yep. All right, next question.
No, I mean, that's about as good advice as you can get.
Next question.
All right, DJ.
Is from Chris Lloyd. Dear Brainstorm crew, there is a local sports card shop that also sells sealed Magic. I would like to approach the owner about setting up a Magic singles case in his shop.
Here we go.
Do you have any advice for how to approach him, especially what kind of consignment fee I should pay him? If he agrees, how do you suggest I price singles? Local LGS. The local LGS.
That's where I buy my scuba apparatus with my ATM machine PIN number.
Charges close to Star City prices. Thanks for any help you can give me, and I think DJ should be a full-time cast member by now.
Yeah, well, no one cares what you think.
DJ, why are you making stuff up?
He didn't say that.
Come on,
He didn't say that, but he wrote that. He typed it out.
Oh, he didn't. God. That's not in the email.
That
I don't believe
that.
That
is in the email, actually.
Liar.
Well, I don't like this guy. Okay, this is a fun question because this is something we've all done and yep. It's great. Basically, just tell him it'll be worth his while. Look, if all you need to do is undercut Star City, then TCG Market, like,
then
I don't
you
know,
can
man.
Go
it's...
to town. So he said this is a sports card shop, right? So we don't actually.
I didn't
we...
know those still existed.
Yeah, I mean, that's where there's one here that. A new place in one of the suburbs of Oklahoma City, an actual Magic store just opened, but the sports card place was the only place to play Magic there for a long time, and it was terrible and still is. You know, the owner's great, but it's just not a good location for Magic. And so, I mean, that's how some people have to play, though. Like, you
like
play where
what,
you can.
How do sports card shops stay in business in, like, 2017? Is it just, like, selling memorabilia? Or
memorabilia.
Like,
it's all, like, no, like, no, it's all memorabilia, signed stuff. Okay.
Like then
they're so actually all money laundering fronts for the mafia.
I suppose that's a possibility.
100% of I don't want to offend anybody. It's like, hey, my local. 100% of them. That's what they're up to.
Okay. Good point. Good point.
So go to this mafioso at his front, and I would open with 15%. Try to get 15% consignment. So, he owns the case space, and then you give him that much.
You should strongly emphasize the very little amount of effort that he will have to put into this for him to make money. You can just
be
like, look, I will do all of the work, and you just have to let me use this space. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But like, if he has the square feet to do this, you should just be like, hey, you have to put zero effort into this, and I will do all of the work, and you will get a couple like extra bucks every week.
I mean,
yeah,
this
it's
is
another offering for him, and there's no overhead for him. He owns the case, and he has to ring up the customers, so it's not zero work for him, but
sure.
Still.
I mean, to be fair, yeah. This is a topic that, you know, took us years to figure out, right? So this is an incredibly, you know, deep topic to discuss, but. Yeah, I mean the things that we're saying are the way to go about it, but also be flexible. I mean, you know what, like you said, we don't know exactly the level of Magic involvement they have, what's going on there exactly, but you know, try to tailor it to what works for them. With that said, yeah, I think 15% is a decent place to start, and the really really important thing to emphasize. Because a lot of people won't pick up on this at first, and it just doesn't necessarily make sense to them when you tell them 15%, is that you are shouldering all of the cost, which is 50 to 60% of the eventual retail value of that card. You're taking on all the risk and putting up all the capital. So then, yes, you're splitting the profits, say, 30 to 15, right, if you're making 45% per card or whatever. And that is true. However, they it's literal free money to them outside of, you know, square footage and whatever if they have to sell stuff after you've priced it. But they don't have to put up any money for it. And I think that's the very important thing to stress in this situation.
I think a non-trivial argument that the store owner could have is that they might be afraid that a singles case will take away from their selling of Sealed Magic product. Like, they might be worried, like, oh, if people have the option to buy singles, then they'll buy less of my booster packs and booster boxes. But I think you just need to reinforce the idea and remind him that you're just opening up an entirely different market to him, and you're not just, like, all Magic players aren't just, like, people who buy boosters but would rather buy singles. There's the Magic players who buy boosters, and then there's the Magic players who only buy singles, and you're basically expanding his customer base by doing that.
And you're... Once word gets out, there's a chance you're bringing more of both into the store.
Right.
So he might actually sell more boosters now that Magic people are coming into the shop. You're not just going to incidentally be like, oh, what's that? Buy a booster. He might actually get real Magic people in the shop, so... Yeah,
and like I said, it all depends. For all we know, this is a sports card place already running, you know, FNM, but just doesn't have singles, right? We don't have all the details necessary, right. But yeah, I mean, if anybody is in a serious position and wants to know more about this, you know, this is something I would suggest reaching out to somebody individually, because there's only so much we can cover in 5 to 10 minutes on the podcast. But
and in terms of how you price singles, just be SCG, go like TCG Market or TCG Low or whatever, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, and I can't stress this enough. There is a 100% chance that this is a mafia front, so just navigate that situation with care also.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. That might work out to your benefit if you angle right. You never know.
Yep, absolutely.
I was talking about opening up another market.
Yeah, he could be the first made guy that got there by selling singles. But hey, and you'll have a new family, so that'll be good. So.
All right.
Best of luck. If you have any more individual questions, hit us up. We love this topic.
DJ, do we have more?
We do.
All right.
I'm trying to find a good one. All right, this one's from Matthew Hetzner. Jason and his Jolly Brew Crew. Did you guys really miss Damnation during last cast? This was from like a week ago, so it's from two casts ago. Did you guys really miss last Damnation during last week's discussion of Secret Rarity? As the exception to the rule, it shows that WotC is willing to reprint a card above a certain price point while still being rare. Reprint risk for any card is very high. Get it together. I demand quality for my $5, Matt.
Well, that is the thing that people pointed out to me. I would also argue that the fact it wasn't reprinted for 5 years is sort of like further, you know, just because... Sure, they did. Yes, they eventually reprinted it there, right? And that's fine, and that's good. It also didn't get reprinted for 5 years. So, like, 5 years after people started saying it was going to be reprinted. So it's hard to... And I think... And to be honest, right, Modern Masters 2017 set a new precedent if it becomes the norm. Because we haven't seen that level of value put into any of the other sets or that amount of printing. So, you know, keep in mind when we talk about that stuff, it's with the information we have, and MM17 may be an outlier or maybe the new norm. We don't know. But either way, I think that the idea of secret rares that we were talking about, secret rarity is, you know, Damnation there was the exception, not the rule, at least historically.
Had it been... Like, a lot of our answers were predicated on Modern Masters 2017 resembling the other Modern Masters sets,
right.
In a lot of ways, and in a lot of ways it really didn't. So, I guess moving forward we can be a little bit more accurate in our predictions, but...
Well, it's something to keep in mind, and if we see it again, then maybe that concept that we discussed becomes outdated, but, you know, right now it's not. Right now Damnation is the exception and not the rule.
Sure. Yeah.
Matt, I really appreciate you being a patron. I know you're a graduate of Michigan State Law School, and $5 is a lot to you. So I really appreciate that. Thanks, Matt. Matt's an old buddy for law school. I can't really talk shit about the same school I went to, but I just did because I'm crazy. Moving on.
More emails?
More emails.
Yep. Just trying to pick one that I'll have time to. Okay, this is a short one. This one is from, I know Corbin will love this one. This one's from somebody named Jeremy Aronson.
Ah, okay. No telling who that might be.
Yeah, it sounds like a total nobody.
Can we have DJ back since he's not even a permanent guest host? We'll trade you a Marcel and half a Ryan. Enjoy the cast. Keep it up. Fuck the Hawks and B-dubs.
You cannot have DJ. I have decided that I'm a Penguins fan this season.
Oh, Jesus.
What do you got against the Penguins, bro?
No, it's fine. They're the Ice Patriots, so enjoy that.
Are they?
Actually, I think the Blackhawks are the Ice Patriots.
Yeah, probably. Like, what? The Penguins haven't been good since, like, the mid-90s, which is when I became a Penguins fan.
What? The Penguins, the last time they won a Stanley Cup was the last time anybody won a Stanley Cup.
Yes, but I mean, you know, historically. That's new.
Yeah, that's...
That's new.
That's... It's all Phil Kessel, everybody.
Wait, Corbin, so you're saying you don't want me to leave? You enjoy having me on this cast?
No, we just don't want Jeremy to have you back. We don't want him to have nice things.
I'll take
something
it.
Like that, yes.
I'll take that compliment.
All right.
Did I accidentally call you a nice thing?
Yep. No take backsies.
I'll get that in editing. It's not a chewing noise, so I'm going to take it out.
All right, more emails?
More emails!
Yep. This name I might... Chris Hartjes? Hartjes? H-A-R-T-J-E-S.
Oh, man, I'm glad you had to read that. I was like, God, he's an idiot. And then you spelled it out. I'm like, ugh!
I mean, it doesn't change the statement, but yeah.
Hello, Corbin, Jason, and permanent guest host who sells me cards via Twitter, DJ.
Yes. I just love emails that insult you.
That's not really an insult. That's his title.
Well, yeah. That's fair. I love accurate
listener,
emails.
I even had dinner with Marcel last year when I was in the Bay Area, and a happy Patreon subscriber. I'm a legacy, vintage, old school player with a very small collection of cards outside my chosen decks due to not being independently wealthy and playing those formats as a casual who can get... Dude, there's too many dashes in this fucking... As a casual who can get to competitive player, I am contemplating switching legacy decks. I've been playing my existing decks for almost 3 years and have non-English cards for most of it because I feel like the deck is getting stale and I want to change. At the same time...
If you guys don't get back to me in the next week, I'm just going to go ahead and build miracles. I ordered 4 of the Masterpiece counterbalances. They're on the way.
If you can get a refund on those. Yeah, you get a refund.
At the same time, I don't have the funds available to drop $1,550 to $2,000. That's a very specific number. Drop $1,550 to $2,000. That's a very specific price range.
You're a specific
price
range.
Hey, the man knows what... He could drop $1,540 is what he's saying.
Buy the cards I need for the deck I really want to play, so clearly I will have to trade some stuff away to make it happen. What are some strategies you can recommend to make the process of trading in and out of decks and internal formats easier?
Who wants to take it? Yeah, all right. It'll be me.
I mean, like, I was going to go with a simple answer of, like, if you're fine taking, like, a 20% loss, you can go to a GP and get some pretty nice trade-in margins for those Eternal staples because there are some good vendors out there as long as your cards aren't beat to shit. Non-English stuff. That's tricky, actually. If most of his stuff's non-English, that actually may be harder than...
If it were Japanese or Russian or something good, I don't suppose he would have said non-English. He would have said the language.
Yeah.
So I'm forced to speculate that it's Spanish.
Like French or Portuguese or...
Yeah, if it's like a romance language, yeah, I don't know, man. Nobody wants that stuff. Except in those countries, and you might end up having to like put it in an...
High-end Facebook group if it's good.
Yeah, high-end Facebook group.
Yeah, high-end Facebook group. Like, maybe go to a GP and just ask around for players and try to find somebody who, like, is interested in that language. I feel like it really depends on the language here.
Yeah. I mean, you'll hold on to that stuff for a little while, but, like, you'll find the guy who's like, man, I've been trying to put my deck together Spanish. There are all kind of crazy lunatics out there. So you just got to find some crazy lunatic. And if you're saying non-English because it's like Japanese or something like that, that'll move quick.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, if it's like Japanese or Korean or Russian, then you can just take it to a vendor and like they'll actually pay you a decent chunk on like your Japanese grim monoliths or whatever. But
here's the deal. If you did end up getting like Spanish or some junk like that, like presumably you picked it up because it was like $5 cheaper than English and you're like, ha, savings. Just find some dude like you. You know, there are people out there like, oh, whatever. You're going to take a hit, but that's you picked the stuff up because it was cheaper in the first place. So, yeah, you're going to take a hit. And, you know, you'll be happy getting rid of the stuff and getting the stuff for the deck that you do want to play. And that person will be happy getting the stuff for cheaper. So you're probably going to end up trading with a player, and I would do it at the biggest event possible, something like a GP.
Yeah, I also
if you're
would
in the
really
Bay Area, you got good events coming to you, so
yeah. I mean, I would really suggest using, you know, forums, Facebook, that sort of thing to connect with people, because, you know, you want to make sure you're doing it right. And I would suggest being patient about it, not just, you know, ending up within a trade with some sort of, you know, binder grinder on the floor of a GP sort of thing, right? So that's my advice, is to be careful.
Well, I think binder grinders would be less inclined to pick up some of this non-English stuff, so yeah, you're almost, I mean, like by design going to end up.
Well, it just means they're going to give you really bad numbers on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't take really bad. You don't have to take really bad numbers. What you have are legacy cards, right?
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Be patient.
Yeah. If you can be patient, and it sounds like you can.
Unless your deck was Miracles, in which case.
Go! Yeah. Sorry about your luck.
Yeah.
More emails?
Yeah, I've got a fun one to round it out.
All right.
This one's from Marcus Roth from Patreon. I have a mailbag question. What is the casts in DJ2, I guess, or whatever? Worst specs. Maybe you pre-ordered 30 at 15 each and other bulk rares, stuff like that. Follow up. Do you really think those specs realistically still have a shot? P.S. Force something to P.S. Force DJ to do something to be a real guest. Enough teasing.
94 Splinter Frights.
I can't. What is the name of that creature? The Return to Ravnica one drop. That's blue red. 1/1.
The Magus Elemental.
Oh, so many of those. Oh, I was doing so well on camera, you guys. That was when I stopped buying reactively. I was like watching the coverage, and there was like, this Niv Magus deck is 5-0, and it turns out the guy had 3 buys. Everything I did was so smart in Return to Ravnica, except the cards I bought with cash. Like everything I was, all the trades I was doing, I was like, I traded into Abrupt Decays at 15, out of them at 20, got rid of all my zombie crap, and picked up like Supreme Verdicts and Detention Spheres at like $2-3 each. I picked up so many Death Riot Shamans for $6 in trade. I paid $3 cash for Angel of Serenity. I was just crushing it. And then I was like, I'm king of the world. And so I saw this Niv-Magus deck on camera, and I spent $100 on Niv-Magus Elemental.
Nice. Nice work, buddy. Can't
I
don't
even remember the name of the card. I had to ask somebody else what the name of the card was, so I guess that answers your question. If I think the card still realistically has a chance, I've written it off to the extent that I don't even remember that card's name. It's that dead to me.
Yeah, I mean, you can't win them all, right?
Corbin, your Splinter Fright meme is pretty ancient, so do you want to elaborate?
Yep. So,
and by do you want to elaborate, I mean, can you tell it so we can make fun of you again?
Yeah, let's take a walk back in time here to Scars of Mirrodin.
My story was faster. I feel like my story was over.
This isn't
going to
take long. There was a card named Stoneforge Mystic, and everyone thought it was garbage, and it was $2 in whatever block, Zendikar block. And then, obviously, Scars of Mirrodin came out, and it spiked because they made good equipment. So then we get in a Shard, which is a graveyard block, and has Splinter Fright in it. And the next set's about to come out. I'm like, I'm going to learn my lesson. This is the mechanic they're pushing. Clearly, it's going to be good. Why would it be bad? So Splinter Fright is going to be
just like Stoneforge Mystic.
I mean, I paid like you know, like 90s. I don't know, like 70 cents, under $1 or something for them each. You know, and I thought it was the same idea, right? I thought that this is the mechanic they're pushing in this set or block or whatever, so it's going to pay off. And it didn't. So I have 94 Splinter Frights, and I still have them because I never even took them out of the packaging they came in. And they're sitting on my desk, where I've kept them for years as a reminder.
How thick is the dust layer?
I mean, it's got moved a few times, so I don't know. But, you know, it's just a reminder that...
I would think that there's a reminder that every time you open your refrigerator, you think about the fact that you got out of Scalding Tarn at like $22.
Oh, I mean...
It went up to $100.
Yeah. I made money on all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with what you did there.
Yep. You saved 80% for the next guy. And you know what? That wasn't your worst spec.
I got into all those at like $10 trade, right? And then I got out of I had 100 blue fetch lands, and I got out of them all at like 20 to 25 cash. So even when they spiked, I wouldn't have got more than 50 or 60 if I'd held on to them. And at the time, I was like just out of college. I didn't have a lot of money. It was my first thing I was really deep on. So it was great. And I bought my wife a fridge with it.
No, I know that worked out fine, and we all told you to do it on the podcast.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was back when DJ was still in diapers.
It might be
true. At the very beginning of this podcast.
Might be true.
All right, so my worst spec is it's a card from Gatecrash, and it was heralded as the next Dark Confidant.
Oh, did you go deep?
No. I didn't buy it as the next Dark Confidant. See, I was smart about it. You see, I was smart about it. I waited until the hype from it being the Dark Confidant went down to like $4. And then I read an article by Gerard Fabiano about this really, really sweet Grixis, like, troll-ish aggro deck. It was Dustmantle Seer, Snapcaster Mage, burn Dust spells, Mantle discard spells. Seer. It was like a counter. It was like a tempo-y deck, and so it had a really strong position in the metagame because everyone else was playing Thragtusk and Angel of Serenity and Barrier Rites. So you would slam Dustmantle on turn four. You'd spin the turnaround. They'd flip an Angel of Serenity. You'd flip a Searing Spear. They'd take like seven. You'd take two. They already played a Shockwave in this game, so they're down to 11. You crack them for four in the air on turn five, and then you have Searing Spears and Snapcasters in your hands to win the game. And I crushed FNM with this deck for weeks on end, all the way until Dragon's Maze came out, and that entire time I was just picking them up in trade at $4 a piece. I didn't actually buy any, but I definitely traded for like 30 or 40 of these at $4 a piece. And the entire time, I was like, this deck's so good. Like, Gerard Fabiano's cleaning house with this. Like, he's going to play it in some big events. He's going to top eight something. It's going to be huge. And then it never went anywhere. I still maintain to this day that deck was really powerful. But I learned a valuable lesson of, unless you go to a GP and crush those idiots yourself, then the card won't go anywhere.
That is correct.
So you learned the lesson of Seance.
Basically.
That was the lesson. Cedric Phillips, after Ryan and I were hitting him up on Twitter a lot, it's like, dude, play Seance. Play our Seance deck on stream. He's like, okay, I'll play Seance. And then he played that stupid, that red, white, blue version where you use the Phantom where you just deck yourself with Lab Maniac.
Mirror
he played
Phantasm.
That version. Yeah, he just played that version. And we were like, no. And he's like, Seance sucks. And we're like, no, that is not the lesson. So, who knows what kind of house I'd be living in if he just played a different Seance. I would have held on to him for too long and got blown out by the reprint anyway. I'd be like, no, these are mine.
God, like, so. Everyone at the shop, like, has this recurring joke where anytime anybody starts getting talking about Dustmantle Seer, I'll just go off for, like, 50 minutes because I can recite that deck list from memory. I had Augur Bolas, Olivia... Triggered. Red Boar, just so many good cards. You could play Cavern of Souls on a Wizard and like cast 11 out of your 12 creatures.
Wow, you do sound like Ryan right now though, just talking up some terrible deck.
It was a good deck.
All right, man.
Okay.
It was a really good deck.
He's an FNM grinder.
All right, let's. That's my favorite Ryan meme. For people who don't know, Ryan Vachard. Used Sick podcast with us, if you guys don't know, if you're newer listeners, before we became the three of us. And he one time went on about how the F&M grinders were a thing, and it was just this particular crowd, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, blah, I don't know, blah, I don't know, blah, I don't know.
Like, we know that it's true. Like, Fetchlands dipped their rotation just a little bit. Like, they certainly didn't get more expensive. So, like, that's the only...
The reason for that is you get a lot of people who... Like, I guess what I just call them is like F&M grinders. And these are the guys who don't care about any of the older formats. And so no matter what, once their cards get ready to rotate, they just sell them. Like, they don't look at, oh, these will be good in Modern, these will be good in Legacy. And you have enough of those people that dump into the market that it does make the price go down, at least temporarily, and then it readjusts itself. And yeah, I mean, like, it's going to happen with almost anything. Like, it has to be very, very playable outside of...
That's okay, Ryan. You think F&M Grinder is a thing, and you say it every week on the podcast.
Well, I agree with you, Jason. I know Omoto is $6.50 for the two cards.
Oh my God.
Moves and Mutavolt, yeah. And they're not going to get any cheaper, and they're internal playable.
I will say this about the F&M Grinder thing. Like, I think the better term is casual player.
No, it's not, though. It's like...
No, they're not really...
Your local stores who are very competitive, and they play Tier 1 decks. They're not casual players, but they don't go, like... They're the kind of guys that may go to a GP if it's within an hour or two.
Yeah,
that's,
I understand.
No, I love to give Ryan shit, but there were actually like guys at my old shop that had a secret Facebook group that they wouldn't allow anybody to join, and they would like come up with all this tech so they could win F&M and get booster boxes for cheap. With their
I mean,
like, as much as I'm giving Ryan shit, that's an actual phenomenon.
It is. I guess in my mind, anyone who doesn't play at a PTQ or higher level, I consider someone casual. But yeah,
well, that's because you've got pro points, Corbin. We can all have pro points.
Shut up. There's definitely
one for one at the Invitational.
There's a level between PTQ, GP grinder, and casual kitchen table player. So yeah, I mean, I agree. That's a real thing.
Yeah, they're still not Timmy though. I don't know where you got that one.
It is a thing.
All right, shut up.
I was an F&M grinder for like 2.5 years.
No, but it wasn't just the term. It was the specific, like, whatever he was saying about it. You'd have to go find it and listen to it. Maybe when episode 200 comes out.
I remember listening to that episode and agreeing with him because I was an F&M grinder.
Hey, Patreons, write us an email and let us know whether you think episode 200 will come out first or episode 300.
Yeah. Anyways, let's move on. Do we have any more emails, or are we moving on from those this week?
I think that's all of them. I'm going to double check.
All right. Well, let's – Jason, I know you want to recite this. You had it ready earlier. Tell us about some bans and unbans.
Okay. Let's talk about the format I care about least first. That's Legacy. I used to care about Legacy. No longer care about Legacy. And that's because they banned Sensei's Divining Top today. No, not really. I don't care about Top.
Most people were happy about
Legacy
it.
Really... Yeah. Some people said this is going to kill Legacy, and then...
I mean, people... I get
really,
people...
really dumb.
I get people who are... Obviously, people play Miracles. But even if people who play Miracles have known for like a year, like, it could happen anytime.
Yeah.
Is just so annoying.
It's just the logistical issues are almost enough by itself. And then you add the fact it's just de facto best deck for like 2 years now.
I actually I didn't like read the notice that I got unbanned. The way I heard about it was a friend of mine who's been a longtime Miracles player for like at least 3 years. He messaged me on Facebook and said asked if I had 4 scroll rack. And I was like, well, I guess Top got banned.
Soothsaying is sold out in Brazil, I noticed.
Yeah.
Well, Willie Edel tweeted that people are buying Soothsaying because you can look at the top X cards in your library for X. I'm like, it's a better top! I don't know, guys. Somebody tweeted, hey, was it the sign in the parking lot? Because somebody put a sign in front of Wizards headquarters sign. That banned Top. And someone's
worked.
Like, Sam Stodd said on Twitter, is like, no, that definitely... definitely was before that. And someone's like, yeah, what was it before you made the counterbalance invocation? He's like, yeah, we made the counterbalance invocation 18 months ago.
Right,
so
exactly.
That gives you a little bit of insight into, like, how glacial the pace is on some of this stuff. Like, they're making these decisions before 18 months of this deck being the best deck in Legacy. And 6 to 12 months of the deck being the best deck in Legacy is enough to convince people, like, all right, we need something to happen. So,
I don't know if a lot of things
change in a year and a half.
Yeah. It's not necessarily that... Yeah, I mean, they decide on these things pretty close to the actual dates of when they get banned. You know, like they said in the article, they met, you know, within the past month or something, to figure out what was being banned. But they've been watching it for a while and gathering data on it, and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, the counterbalance thing really stings, and Star City is being a real good guy, Star City. And they said, hey, if you bought the invocation, we will give you a refund, which is very nice of them, because those are some feel-bads.
Yeah. All right.
So good on you, Star City.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what it does, I think Elves becomes a better deck. Past that, I don't know. It's been so long, like literally, like forever, probably since Cold Snap, that a countertop deck hasn't been in the format. So, like, there's no telling what's going to happen.
Well, this hurts some other decks that use it. People are talking about, like, I think I saw Fiendline Logmore tweet about what she's going to play in the only deck she plays, which is High Tide.
Yeah, and, like, Painter's
Servant like, got a lot of people are. Yeah,
it's not that big of a deal, though.
A lot of people are affected. If you go through Twitter, like, a lot of the Legacy people I always see tweeting, they're like, ugh. EDH players are sort of like, oh boy, this means top will be cheap and we can pick them up. First of all, don't. You're a monster. Second, I think like the sudden surge in EDH demand, just because I don't think the price will go down a ton, because I think people will snap these up as soon as they get like cheap enough. So I think EDH might take care of some of the latent demand for tops. And the price is certainly going to go down, but I don't think it's going to ever be like super cheap, because I think this is, nobody wants to pay $30 for a top or whatever for their EDH deck, but $8-$9, I don't know.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that starts to look good, so I don't know if
I
it
don't
ever
anticipate
gets that cheap,
I mean,
really.
I mean, 99% of the tops I ever sell at the store for Commander, not Legacy anyways, so.
Yeah, same here.
All right, so yeah. Let's talk about the easy one, right? No bans in Modern.
Well, yeah.
Were you going to say, did you mean to say standard?
Well, I mean, that's a longer discussion, but I mean, I wanted to just go format by format, right, and work our way.
Well, there were bans in Vintage.
There were. There might be three or four people who care about that.
Ooh, well, it matters, because that's like the last place anybody was playing Get Pro.
There were no bans in Vintage, actually. There were restrictions.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's a good point. They restricted Get Probed to one copy. And didn't they do something with Gush?
Gush went from 4 to 1.
Yeah, they restricted Gush.
Which they had unrestricted it before, and then they unrestricted it. Which makes sense. Gush was really dumb for a while. But I was playing a lot of Vintage during the time when it was unrestricted, and it was dumb. So whatever. Bye, Gush. So that doesn't really do anything financially.
Yeah, Vintage won't matter. No bans in Modern is interesting, because there were a lot of people who were, I wouldn't say clamoring for a Dust Shadow ban, but a lot of pros I saw today talking about, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens at some point. But this is one of the things, removing the Pro Tour from Modern, or the Modern Pro Tour, is that there's not a lot of pressure on it. I mean, Dust Shadow is the best deck, and it's like 3 of the 5 best decks or whatever, and it's, you know, it just crowds out like traditional Jund, that sort of thing. But I mean, what, we have a Grand Prix every couple months? It's played every week. It's not ruining.
They addressed it too.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like Wizards is really just sweating bullets, waiting for players to figure shit out so they don't have to ban stuff. So they're kind of like, I think Amon Kat's going to take care of Standard, fingers crossed. So they're sort of like, we really hope people take care of Death Shadow on their own. And people are starting to play Condemn and stuff like that.
Just for Condemn does nothing. That actually, got mocked by Death Shadow's players.
I mean, they literally mentioned that. Aaron Forsyth literally mentioned that in the article. They're like, oh, Condemn and stuff like that. We think people are coming up. So they just
not a good sign. That actually shows them being out of touch. Because Condemn does not do anything against Death Shadow.
Yeah, so they really will take any excuse to be like, oh, we don't have to ban anything. But, like, maybe they maybe they should have.
I mean,
so
I don't,
does this
I don't
mean like next
their...
time they get a chance, they'll be like, oh, well, actually, Modern isn't any healthier than we thought, and we may have to do something. So maybe Death Shadow survived what? They're doing more frequent ban announcements, right?
Well, they are having one, but I honestly think that Modern, and just to clarify that statement, I say it does nothing. Obviously, if you contend their Death Shadow, it's great. The issue is the deck plays 8 discard spells, and we'll be honest. You don't ever actually get to condemn a Death Shadow. It's great on paper, and once it became known, a week later, nobody actually got to do it. So it doesn't make that deck any worse. Yeah, I just think there's no pressure on it, though. There's a Grand Prix every few months. No one cares. Like, it doesn't matter. So that's...
do they care about? If they don't care about Vintage at all, they don't care about Legacy at all because nobody's supporting Legacy. They don't care about Modern because, hey, there's no pressure on it. If they won't even acknowledge that stuff like Frontier is popping up, and I don't think they should acknowledge it.
Was it, though?
What do they care about?
I mean, Standard? They care about Modern. They care about all these things, right? There's just not a lot of pressure to...
Yeah, but what are they working on trying to get right?
Standard.
Are they?
Limited formats have been killer for the last 2 or 3 years. Just for the record. So that's something to keep in mind.
That's a good point.
BFZ was pretty bad, but it got better with Oath, and every format since then has been great. Obviously, it's too early to talk about and to know about Amonkhet, but yeah, and they get that right? And Modern is fine. Modern's, you know, Death Shadow's the best deck, but it's not like ruining your local meta best deck, you know. It's not Eldrazi winner. It's just the best deck at a Grand Prix. It's not unbeatable, but it will stifle diversity over, you know, a term of so long, right? So that's where I'm at with it, and I play a lot of Modern, and I think that I wouldn't be surprised to see Death Shadow get banned in the next 6 months, maybe a year, but it's just not going to happen yet. There's no pressure for it too. Now let's talk about Standard, though. People are up in arms over no Cat ban.
I was expecting Cat and Gideon, and I was surprised.
I heard Gideon too, and that didn't make much sense to me.
I definitely didn't expect Gideon to get banned. I mean, Gideon's the best card in Standard, but I don't think they can ban Gideon.
Well,
banning Emrakul is bad enough.
I expected that they would ban Gideon for the same reason that they banned Reflector Mage, and that was that, like, if they ban Cat, they're worried that Gideon just becomes the best card by a much larger margin.
I mean, Gideon's already the best card.
Right, so, like, that's what I was worried about, is that, like, Cat has been keeping Gideon down, and if they ban Cat, then Gideon just becomes way, way too good. So I was thinking, like, okay, they could ban Cat, and then just play it safe by banning Gideon, because they didn't expect it to be in Standard right now anyway.
They thought
they could distract us by printing a worse Gideon that looks like a better Gideon.
Well, there are more answers in Amonkhet. I think it's maybe unfair to say that it's not. I think it's fair to wait and see. I mean, they printed like the 4-mana thing that can't prevents a card from being cast and prevents it from dealing damage to you. Cast out is the big one. It's a 4-mana instant speed Oblivion Ring that also cycles for 1 or 2. Like, those are the cards that will make something happen.
Manglehorn hits both decks.
Well, Manglehorn doesn't do anything. Manglehorn doesn't do too much against 4-color Saheeli.
How do they? Well, they have to kill the Manglehorn before they can go off.
Set.
It makes the it
makes
enters
the stuff
battlefield
come in
shatters,
and tapped,
and then all their stuff comes in. All their artifacts come in tapped, so it stops the Saheeli combo, and it just like comes in and poops on a Heart of Kirin.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, it definitely is very good against Mardu.
And it also just, like, happens to shut it down, the Saheeli combo, while not just being a useless card like Authority of the Consoles.
Right.
Yeah, Manglehorn's very good.
Now, the issue is Manglehorn can just be played against Mardu by Saheeli combo. That's
I don't like that logic.
Well, I mean, it is, right? It's just it doesn't necessarily make that deck any worse. It's good against it, sure, but a lot of cards are good against it. That doesn't change it, right? So it's hard to say, because the real issue is that the deck or the two decks, you can beat one, you just can't beat them both. And that's the bigger problem. that we have. So that's sort of where it's at.
Well, okay, so is there any money to be made in a no ban standard?
Well, we saw Glorybringer shoot up.
Yeah.
Which is good because we talked about that on the cast last week. I know that.
Yeah, we nailed that one.
Yeah. BBD obviously gets a lot of credit for it, but I was a fan of it as well. I know before he came on at least. And it was just way too cheap for a card that interacts well. And it's up to over $10 as of this recording, even though, you know, it probably won't stay there, but still.
You know what else is over $10 as of this recording?
Protean Hulk.
Protean Hulk. Yep. It's time to move on and talk about the real shakeup, which was the bans and unbans and all the stuff that happened in EDH. The big one, Leovold banned. Goodbye, Leovold. You made Magic no fun for anyone. You made it too easy to accidentally lock people out of the game, whether you meant to or not. Leovold's price?
It's not going to do. I don't think it's not plummets. Do much, yeah.
Because yeah, it's played a lot in Legacy and Vintage. It's
huge in Legacy.
While those are still formats. And the fact that no one's popping any conspiracy anytime soon because, like, the boxes are basically dealer cost on eBay right now and they're not moving means that there aren't a ton of Leovolds going to get injected into the market. So basically the Leovolds are out there, the ones we got, and I think there's enough Legacy and Vintage demand to soak that up. So
it's not like Commander players are just going to fire sale Leovolds and the market's going to flood with them. They're just going to take them out of their decks as they get their decks, and they're just going to move on with their lives. And everyone else is just going to be like, well, this is still insane in Legacy and playable in Vintage and all of this stuff, and it's just going to continue to be what it is, and there's no downward pressure on that price at all, even if it doesn't get played in many more Commander decks.
I know this isn't super relevant, but does the official ban, like, does that card being banned in Commander affect the French list at all? Is that card still playable in, like, French 1v1 or no?
I don't know the answer to that.
I know it's banned already in 1v1, but I'm just curious.
I thought it was already banned in 1v1.
It might be. I don't know.
Not a clue.
It's our job to know that, but, like, at the same time...
Is it? No.
It moves the prices so, like...
It's not my job to know about French Commander.
Because basically, I was asked by James Chilcott, my boss at MTG Price. He's like, hey, now that it's being adopted by Moto, why don't you go look and see what the staples are that could go up, you know, based on more dual commander being played. And then we can talk about those as potential specs. And I looked at it. Everything played dual commander is just Legacy and Vintage staples.
Yeah. Yeah, basically it's one-on-one.
Like, the top play cards is like Brainstorm and Top and, you know, just junk like that. Force of Will, just like... just Swords to Plowshares, Lightning Bolt. Can you imagine playing Lightning Bolt in regular EDH?
It's just one. It's so, just a 1v. It's basically Canadian Highlander with different rule set.
It really is. So basically, that's just sort of nothing we care about. Sometimes the stuff gets banned, but, like, even when those stuff, the cards get banned as generals, like, it doesn't really affect the price at all. So as much as we should know that, should we?
No.
Leovold may be banned in Dual Commander for all we know. We could easily have looked it up in the last 3 minutes we've been talking, but that's how little we care.
All right. So what is going to be affected, though, by Protean Hulk? I mean, you can do a lot with Protean Hulk, right? I know. I'm excited. I can. So when Protean Hulk dies, it's a 6-mana 6/6 green creature. When it dies, get converted mana cost 6, equal to 6, I believe, from your deck and put it directly into play. So I know I can get...
Worth of CMC.
Yeah.
Spread up over as many creatures as you want.
Yeah, I'm excited I can get Kitchen Finks, Viscera Seer, and Malira, Silvok Outcast, off of it. So it's definitely going to my Caridor deck.
Yeah, Caridor seems to be the deck because it's already got plenty of sack outlets. Everyone immediately just went and bought all the Protean Hulks, and now they just, like, went from, like, $3 to, like, $40. And
I sold all mine at the shop at 8, and people, my Commander players tonight were pretty happy about that.
People really aren't thinking next level. They're not buying Flash. They're not buying Phyrexian Delver. They're not buying Karmic Guide. Like, if more people are playing these combos, these combo pieces. Yeah. There's all kinds of stuff.
Like, the old school combo with it in, like, a teamer deck.
Yeah, but, like, Flash, I think Flash has got real upside.
Why is Phyrexian Delver
relevant? Because it's in black. You don't have to play it in a bunch of colors. You can play it in a deck with no white if you use Phyrexian Delver.
Are you thinking of the same card I am?
Yeah, the 5-mana 2/2 Phyrexian Delver from the...
That reanimates stuff. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one when...
Yeah.
The one when it enters the battlefield...
So are you saying, Jason, what you're saying is it's part of the...
from your graveyard to the battlefield and you lose life.
What you're saying is it's part of the combo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people weren't playing Delver and anything, Phyrexian Delver and anything else, really.
Well, I just didn't know what the combo was with that.
Yeah, it's part of the old school combo with it from when Flash Hulk was broken in Old Extended or whatever, where you can lose.
But I mean, you can do this in green black. You don't need any white if you use Phyrexian Delver, Viscera Seer, and stuff like Blood Artist and Body Snatcher.
Because the only Flash Hulk combo I used to know was like the Malyra one. So I didn't play back when it was like.
Well, the actual Flash Hulk combo of old is.
Yeah, it was like Disciple of the Vault, right?
No.
Disciple of the Vault and like, the Phyrexian Wall. Well, like, you played a bunch of X cost, X toughness walls. So you just play them for zero and they just like went straight to the yard.
It's the.
Are you talking the
I thought it was Ornithopter with Phyrexian Walker and Disciple of the Vault.
Okay.
Well, there was like a Mog Fanatic.
That's what that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Is Mog Fanatic.
There was a crazy Mog combo Fanatic, that was so complicated
it's Mog,
that people didn't know it.
It's Mog Fanatic, Body Double, Revelark, and I believe Viscera Seer. You can get all of that, I think.
It wasn't Viscera Seer, it was Carrion Feeder.
Well, sure, but it's actually a modern deck.
This combo predated Viscera Seer.
Yeah, it's actually a modern deck, and you can, with those pieces, you can actually go off at instant speed, and you can beat Path to Exile if you sequence it properly. So it's actually even pretty resilient. But regardless, those are the sort of things you should look for because, you know, those are what's going to be affected by this, and you know, something like Flash, perhaps. But I don't know how much opportunity I see in Flash, right?
Why not?
It's got two printings. It's a rare. I mean, yeah, it's like $2 right now. Yeah, you're right. Why not? Essentially.
Yeah, I mean, Flash and Hulk go together like peas and carrots.
Sure.
Like that slow guy and that chick with AIDS, they went together. So,
Jesus Christ, Jason.
Oh, you don't... Oh, I'm sorry. Forrest Gump's Untouchable? That movie was the worst.
Wow.
Man, reverse the genders and, like, watch that sex scene again.
No, don't ever say that. All right. So, so there you go. That's a lot of bannings and unbannings that went down here.
I thought you were talking about a different movie.
What? What did you think I was talking about?
There's that movie where like the two or where like the guy and the girl are terminally ill and they get together and then they like die.
Is that The Fault in Our Stars?
Yep, that's what he's talking about.
When I mentioned the slow guy and the chick with AIDS, you thought I was referencing The Fault in Our Stars. How old were you when Forrest Gump came out? Two?
When did that movie come out?
95.
Okay, so I was 1 year old maybe, depending
oh my
on
God.
How many. Depending on what month that was. I probably wasn't even a year old because I was born in November.
Yeah, it was either 95 or 96 because it beat Shawshank Redemption and Pulp Fiction and everyone was really upset.
No, but like I for some reason my brain didn't register like the slow part. I just thought of that as, I don't know. I just like,
who had
like,
AIDS in The Fault in Our Stars?
I don't
they had
know.
Cancer.
I've never seen it. I just assumed that
I bet you've seen it.
Nobody's seen it.
Why
too.
Do you? Why would you assume that?
Because you immediately went to it when no one else did.
I know what it's about. I've never seen the movie.
This is so embarrassing for you.
That's fine. I just.
Anyways.
Okay, I can Google it. I'll see if she does have AIDS.
What?
You won't look up
what?
If Leopold's band
I think she had
Duel
cancer,
Commander.
Man. I'm pretty sure it was a cancer
okay, yeah,
movie.
It is cancer.
You
is
won't look up if Leopold
you?
Is banned in Duel Commander, but you'll look up if a chick had also AIDS on top of cancer in a movie based on a John Green book.
Wow.
You beat this cancer. You'll get better. I just knew it. But then I'll just die of AIDS. Wow. What a great story.
Wow.
Oh boy, this is why you're on the podcast, because you're the fun. I don't know why people think I'm the funny one.
It's funny for different reasons.
You are a laugh riot, DJ. So basically, go research Protean Hulk combos, because until they're like, we made a huge mistake, and reban it, next time they're able to ban cards, you're going to have free reign to just like... You know what? Honestly, I really think they are pretty confident that this is not going to ruin EDH. I think it's just going to be like, yeah, it's going to be like Mike and Strike,
another, basically. It's just another combo thing. It's fine. I mean, it's going to be fun, but I'm going to enjoy it.
I mean, everyone was like, oh, God, they need to take the rules committee away from Sheldon unbanning Kakusho. I'm going to make them regret it with my Kakusho deck. And then nothing happened, so...
Yeah.
I don't know that this is exactly Kakusho, but like I don't think it's
to be fair, this is weird, and immediately janky crap on the list that probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah, it's not Golgari Grave Troll either, where they like, let's try this out. Nope.
Yeah.
Somebody re-banned, on the rules committee list lost to Sway of the Stars at one point, and they're like, never again.
I mean, that is...
No, you know what Sway of the Stars does?
It just resets the game, doesn't it?
It's Scheherazade. Yeah. Fuck that. Kill that with fire. Not in my games.
Yep. All right. So let's, before we get out of here, any stories to share from Mom and Cat? I mean, Glorybringer is the big movement that we've seen so far. The EV on boxes is out. It's like $90 a box, which is mediocre.
Real bad. Oh, I got a Containment Priest invocation in my pack, and nobody wanted it on eBay. Or on eBay also. But like, shocker. I put it on Twitter. I'm like, hey. And everyone's like, oh, that looks less terrible than I thought. You know what? Seeing one up close, I hate it less. It's the art.
I thought they still looks terrible bad. To me. It's still pretty unreadable to me.
The text is
Proxy guys look so good. They're so easy to read. I wish they looked like that.
Well, you know what? They'll know next time.
Yeah.
I let my fiance open my 11 prize packs from the pre-release. And I sat across the table from her and watched her open them. And on the last one, she got the Oblivion Ring Angel, and she got a Worship. And I had to look across this table and strain my eyes for 4 or 5 seconds. And I was like, oh, it's a Worship. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah.
Like, I just couldn't read it from across the table.
It's worth less, but like I would like a Worship because I would actually play with it.
30 right. bucks, and it's yours.
So what do we think about Glorybringer, guys? It spiked about $10 today. And by the time this cast comes out, I imagine it'll be somewhere between like $5 and $7. I think it could hold $5 for a while.
I mean, if it gets a deck, it's probably a staple.
I mean, I think
how
it's going to go on Mardu.
Are we talking?
I think it goes into Mardu. Probably goes. It might go into four colors to Healy too.
Can it crew a vehicle?
Yes. It can also kill everything.
I'm just worried that I won't have any creatures to crew my vehicles in my Mardu deck.
What?
What am I taking out to put in Glorybringer? I'm taking out a creature that could be used to crew a vehicle.
I mean, Glorybringer's going to see... I don't know. It's going to see play somewhere. You may replace some of the 5-mana Planeswalkers or something, too. You know, I can't speak to exactly what it'll look like, but... It's definitely going to happen.
Is there anything else in the set that looks promising based on how much better it performed in Limited than you expected? Because that's... honestly, playing the pre-release and stuff like that informs what I pick up. I think... was it Gideon's Decree or whatever? The thing where you name a card? The better mm-hmm. Nevermore?
Yeah. Sort of, yeah.
That seemed a little clunky and too slow for Limited.
I
liked how it played.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that's very good in Constructed.
I think Glorybound Initiate has potential if the bans hit after 5 weeks from the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously sort of the thing hanging over everything here is what the ban list...
What's Glorybound Initiate? Is that the thing that turns into a 4-4 lifelink if you exert it?
Yeah, I had that at the pre-release, and it was pretty good because I had that with the... split card that untaps your guy and gives it like the split card combat trick, the rare. So I would like attack with it, make it a 4-4, exert it. They'd attack me back. I'd untap it, make it a 5-3 lifelink, block, kill their guy, untap, exert it again, and I gain like 14 in a turn.
Yeah, obviously, rares are good.
No, but I mean, like, I think that's Constructed viable too, assuming like the cat goes away.
Oh, you could. Man, you got Synchronous Strike too, that untapped stuff. I don't know.
Always watching is RA jump, but like that's might be where you want to be, is just like attacking with a 5/5 vigilance lifelink every turn.
Yeah, that card's real good. You can even get some money out of Aethersphere Harvester if people start.
Yeah, maybe that card's really good, and I mean Kaladesh is now not being drafted anymore, so
well, that's Aether Revolt.
Or sure, but like the block.
Kaladesh block.
Yeah. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see where things go. It's going to be interesting.
I mean, we're probably not your, hey, what do these guys think about what Standard's going to look like, guys? But I don't know, man. I think this is a pretty good EDH set. There's nothing that is like Paradox Engine powerful in it, but I think there's a lot of good commons and uncommons. Writing my set reviews with EDH in mind, I think there's real money, especially in foils of stuff like Manglehorn. So, I don't know. Just get out there and play some games. Figure out what you want to play, and that'll inform what you should buy, nerds. Unless you're DJ, and then you end up buying a bunch of... I can't even think of the name of your card. That's how embarrassing it is.
All right, so before we go, I know we're going a little long tonight, guys, but let's break some bulk before we get out of here.
Breaking bulk time. Breaking bulk time. Break.
All right, break. I have two, because a listener emailed me, or is a Patreon message, I can't remember, but they emailed me a couple weeks ago, and they let me know that I got skipped 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
You guys got to do your breaking bulk picks, and then I apparently was left behind, and then we didn't get to do it last week, so I'm taking two, and I'm going
Your first. Problems are not my problems.
I'm remedying this situation right now, so...
Dude, you can take mine now.
All right, so the first one is a Gatecrash Green Instant Uncommon.
Gatecrash
Green. Uncommon Green Instant from Gatecrash. That's a better way to
What's its mana cost?
Two.
I'm usually better at these. I can't even picture what Gatecrash was. Was that Return to Ravnica block?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm stumped.
What do you got?
Power defense.
Oh, interesting. The plus 05 in reach,
so
I think.
This became a pick. You can. It's not like a quarter or 50 cents or anything, but you can usually get nickels or dimes on this. It became a pick after Assault Formation was printed in Collins block. And
people
it's just
doing
a way
Dorian-y
to give,
stuff.
Yeah, it's just a way to give your entire team +5/+5 and reach till the end of the turn. It's actually just like a kill you out of nowhere thing. And it's good. It's obviously good in Doran EDH, but like it's just a card that a lot of people skim over, but it actually does have uses considering it was just treated as hot garbage through the entirety of its limited and standard lifetime. So that's just something to look out for. You don't just need to pick out the obvious like charms and stuff. Gatecrash, there's a couple other too. And my other one is a red rare from Commander 2014, and it's a creature.
Commander 2014?
Yes.
Creature.
It went from, like, 50 cents to $3 over the course of the past, like, 6 months.
Oh, man, it's probably, like, some... Is it the guy that goes in the Saskia deck?
No. It was a card that was...
That was Avatar of... Yeah.
It's a card that was new to Commander 2014.
To Tyrant's Familiar?
Yep.
Nice.
7 mana, 5/5 Flying Haste... Lieutenant, as long as you control your commander, it gets +2/+2, and whenever it attacks, it does 7 to their creature. So, I picked one of these up for 10 cents today, and then I was like, oh, geez, I didn't realize that the jump this far. So, I ended up giving the guy an extra, like, dollar afterwards, just because I didn't realize that it had jumped. And, it's just a big, dumb dragon, just like, what's it called? Scourge of the Throne.
Scourge.
Yep. Scourge of the Throne, and just there's a bunch of big dumb dragons that have a low print run, and there's people that collect dragons, so keep your eye out for those.
Nice.
All right, I'm done. I've been vindicated.
I'm just glad I guessed one of them. I thought this was a pick, and then it wasn't a pick, and so I was like, ah, this isn't a pick. So I set it aside, and I found the pile of them today, and now it's a pick again, because it's selling out places. This is from World Wake. It's a white uncommon creature.
The ally, the one mana ally.
Had a Freeblade? Core Firewalker.
Nope. Core Firewalker. No, that costs two mana, and also that's like...
Wait, how much mana did you say cost him?
One mana.
Oh, Perimeter Captain.
White. Yeah, Perimeter Captain.
Yep, when it blocks, you gain three life, right?
Well, when a defender blocks,
when you gain a creature you control, a defender, you gain two life.
Oh, interesting, okay.
But still, it's a wall, and it makes your walls better, and for whatever reason, casual players like these dirtle walls. So, Perimeter Captain was a... I thought for sure would be a pick, and I picked them all out, and they're like, no, these are 4 cents. I was like, yeah, well, okay. And I set them aside, and then I found the pile of them today, so I had a... You know what? Sometimes if you think a card's a pick, that's why I overpick. I tend to overpick, and then I look everything up after I pulled it out of, like, yep, the chaff. And if something is not a pick, but I thought it was a pick, instead of throwing it back in the bulk, I set it aside in a different box. And that's where these Perimeter Captains ended up. So even if you're wrong, you're like, oh, I guess Child of Night isn't a pick. All of a sudden, it could be later. So if you think something's a pick, don't throw it back in the bulk and bulk it out, because chances are you're right about that, because either it was like good and standard, or just like it's better than you thought. You read it and you're like, wow, this is... So just set this stuff aside, because I would have just bulked out these Perimeter Captains and I'd have a nice stack of them getting 15 cents on them. So that's something I don't know if we've mentioned before. If you accidentally pick a card, yeah, don't discard it.
All right, well, I've got one. Magic 2011 Uncommon, also in Dual Deck Phyrexia vs. Coalition, and originally printed in Urza's Saga, and it's actually jumped recently.
Urza's Saga, Phyrexia vs. the Coalition, and what?
It's
2011?
It's an artifact.
What's its rarity? Common?
It is an uncommon.
Urza's Saga initially.
Was the third printing?
Dual Deck, Urza Saga, Magic 2011.
And Magic 2011.
Is this Chromatic Star?
It is not.
No, that wasn't in.
Urza Saga.
Juggernaut?
Nope, it's a one-mana artifact.
Oh, one-mana artifact.
Claws of Gix?
Nope.
No.
Good guess.
That wasn't in 20.
No, not Scrabbling Claws. Jeez, this is tough.
It shouldn't be. It's an infinite combo and vintage.
Oh, Voltaic Key.
Correct. You know, guys, it's actually up to 75 cents.
I do feel like an idiot now.
Yeah, I should.
Oh, M11. Oh, jeez, I can see the different art now. Oh, man, I knew you'd say it and I'd feel dumb. Jesus, Key just seemed... Honestly, I didn't think of it because I thought it would be more expensive than that.
Well, it was, like, I thought it was dead because it was, like, 30 cents for a long time. But it's gone up to 75 cents because of basically Kaladesh Aether Revolt stuff, you know, just artifact things in general. Yeah, yeah, just something to keep in mind.
Pick anything that untaps artifacts. Unwinding Clock.
Block of Omens.
Yep.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Block of Omens is my jam.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking. Unwinding Clock's the rare. Clock of Omens is the uncommon, right, from an M-set. Yeah. That's a good pick right now, even if it's not quite there yet. That's that'll be a pick eventually, and you'll be glad you set them aside.
Yeah.
In true. Your Perimeter Captain pile.
All right. Anything else, guys, before we get out of here? We went a little long this week, but there's a lot to cover.
No, I'm
that's
all
right. We're not going to plug Patreon because someone paid us off not to, so thank you for that.
Yep. All right. Well, this is Brainstorm Brewery. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you next week.
What was I speaking French here? I was pretty clear when I said, we'll talk about it. Gabagool.
All right, there's show notes.
I don't want them. I just want you to have them in front of you.
I'll open them.
Don't. It's just a picture of his penis.